Some guy put lubricant in my rectum, in my anus, and then started inserting objects. They insert objects and pull it out.
They are inserting something in your anus so bad, like so deep, you want to beg them to actually rip you in the right place, because you are thinking it can't be as painful as this. Of course, that's in the moment of that pain.
The last couple of weeks has been a big emotional roller coaster for me and Agatha and our families. So as you're aware, we were abducted in Tanzania by Tanzania security forces, and we were tortured. So when I came back to the country, I said that I will not speak until Agatha is found. And Agatha was found, and you're happy that she's back and alive and she's here. And I said we'll share what happened to us. So when you were, I went to Tanzania on July 18th.
May 18th.
I went to Tanzania on May 18th. We were going there as activists to attend Tundu Lissu's hearing, which was supposed to happen on Monday the 19th. And I was in the same flight with Martha Karua and other activists. There were 8 of us on that particular flight. And when we landed, 3 of us were separated. That was Martha Karua, Gloria, and Ling, and they were deported. I was able to get into the country legally, and my passport was signed and stamped with an entry stamp. I went to my hotel, and I checked in, and I relaxed. And then on the 19th, like the early morning hours of Monday, some men came to my room and were knocking, and were very violent in their knocking. And they were demanding that I go with them. And I said, I can't leave my hotel room at that hour of the night. I said, I need a lawyer. And then at 3:30 a.m., some lawyer showed up and said, oh, these people are police officers, you should go with them. And I said, no, I can't leave my room at night. And I barricaded myself in my room until morning. When morning came, I called, Agatha had come from a different flight, and she was in the same hotel with me, and I called Agatha. I was meant to check out the same day on Monday morning, so I called Agatha and I said, come pick my bags for me and keep the bags in your room for safety purposes, and also because I was supposed to leave the country the same day. So Agatha came to my room and picked my bags. When she picked my bags, I went downstairs, and I found the same people who had come at night were waiting for me, but there were more of them now. There were about maybe 10 to 12 people who were waiting for me. They followed me to the bathroom, and they wanted to arrest me. I screamed in the entire hotel and ran away back to where my colleagues were. They followed me there. They said, oh, we just need to take you for questioning. Where is your phone? I said, I don't have a phone. So they picked me up, took me to immigrations, and they told me to write a statement, which I did. I was fingerprinted, photographed, and then they said, now we need to get your phone. I said, I don't have a phone. I don't know where my phone is. And they took me back to the hotel and reviewed the CCTV of the hotel, and they saw that Agatha came to my room and left with my bags. And that's when Agatha was arrested, taken to her room, which was ransacked. They did not find my phone or my laptop. They took us back to the immigration office, and Agatha was interrogated for hours, for about 2 hours without lawyers. We went there with 3 lawyers from Tanganyika Law Society, but they're not allowed where Agatha was. They interrogated her. Around 6 p.m., I got a call from the Kenyan ambassador to Tanzania, Mr. Isaac Jenga, who told me I was going to get deported from Tanzania. And I was like, okay, I'm happy to go home. Around 6:30-ish, or maybe some few minutes after 6, some guy came who said he was from the state office or state security, and he started beating me up. I was being beaten at the presence of my lawyers and Agatha. He started calling me, saying that I'm an inmate, I'm coming to destroy their country, and I'm a problem, they're going to teach me a lesson. And then they said that we're under arrest. So we were moved from immigration office, me and Agatha, to Central Police Station, where we found a guy called, we later came to know he's called Mafuele. At the station, the beating continued in the presence of those three lawyers who said nothing. And they said, we must produce our phones. When Agatha was being arrested during the day, they found her phone. So they had Agatha's phone, but they did not have my phone. I did not give them my phone. I didn't even have a phone at that particular moment. But they said that they're going to teach me a lesson I'll never forget. At that session is where they said they're going to rape Agatha. That guy called my phone and said he's going to rape Agatha. He stayed there for a couple of hours between, I think, 6 and 8, the slaps, the beatings. And then the lawyers were chased away and were told if they don't go, they'll be investigated. And then the exact words that that guy told them, Nyinyi tutapima uzalendo wenyu. And that meant that we're going to measure the patriotism of those particular lawyers if they did not leave the station. So the lawyers left us. And when the lawyers left us, they did not tell our families that we were being beaten and being harassed and being threatened. Because Mafuele said, Mafuele asked me in front of those lawyers, are you circumcised? I said, I'm circumcised. I said, we're going to circumcise you again. So there's a lot of threats and beatings. I was only being beaten at that station. They did not attach Agatha. So while we were there, they kicked us out of the room. And I said, I want to go to the bathroom. So someone took me to the bathroom. The young man who took me to the bathroom told me, these guys are going to hurt you, and they're going to hurt you so bad. Give them your phone. I said, I don't have my phone. And my fear was, because we had gone to Tanzania, with many other activists, and if I lose my phone, or if they get my phone, they get hold of everyone that I was talking to in the country. So I could not give it my phone or my laptop. So I went back I went to the bathroom, came back, and we were told to wait outside. Mafuele made a phone call to someone, and a few minutes later, some guys came, 6 or 7 of them, very mean-looking people with one lady. Dar es Salaam is very hot, but they all wearing half jackets. And the smelling of alcohol. They looked so, so evil. So when we went to the central position, there was a staircase on this side. So we came in through this staircase. But where we were, there was another private staircase. So they took us out with. They took us downstairs to the car. And we were blindfolded and handcuffed on the back. And it was a white Land Cruiser. At the back, there were like a lot of sticks and a lot of fake number, like a number of number plates in that car. The guy across me had an AK-47. They were all in civilian clothes. So Agatha sat. It was a Land Cruiser. Agatha sat this seat. I was this other side in a face me position. And then they drove off. Then they took us, drove for about 20 minutes. Then they took us to a building. To this place where they went to torture us. When you go there, they told me to get off the car, I came out, and then they banged the door on my face. I had a marquee, I don't know if he's still there. They, I don't know what they were waiting for. I think they were putting some things ready. They got me out. Well, I was still handcuffed and blindfolded, and they told me to strip naked. And I stripped naked. When I stripped naked, they removed my handcuffs, and then I was grabbed by about 4 men, and they lifted me up so fast. Before they lifted me, actually, they put some gloves on my hands. Then they lifted me up. They lifted me up and tied me upside down. There's a photo I saw online about what they did to us. It's in my bag. You can distribute when I'm done talking. So we were put on upside position where my legs were up like this. My body's up. I'm stuck naked. And then they started beating my feet. So they would beat me and massage my feet. Beat me and massage my feet. I was screaming so hard. I couldn't even, there was no tears coming out because of how painful it was. And one of them said, put his hand in his mouth. So they put my hand in my mouth. Then they would tell me, stop screaming. The kids are sleeping. And then to drown my screams, they opened the car because I could hear them. They were playing gospel music in the background. They beat me. Then they removed the underwear from my mouth and they started questioning me, asking my name, where are you from, why are you here, who sent you, why are you coming to destabilize our country? And then they said, Wekamoto. Some guy put lubricant in my rectum, in my anus, and then started inserting objects. Insert objects and pull it out. They would. Okay. They would put objects in my anus and then say you're feeling nice, say you're feeling good. Then they say Asante Samia, Asante Samia. So I say Asante to their president. Then they'll push hard and then it out again. They did that. See, I started bleeding. And they dropped me. Then I'm still blindfolded. They took me to a wall. And then told me to face the wall and then squat. Then a man came and was putting his fingers in my anus and then saying that, say you're feeling nice, say you're feeling good, say Asante Samia. Then they would do that. And then they told me to turn around, I'm naked. So all this time they're telling me they're recording everything they're doing to us, or rather they're doing to me. So they're recording this. They're teaching me a lesson. So I'm stuck naked. They turn me around, say your name, your wife's name, your kid's name. Where do you live? Where do they go to school? I'm naked. And they remove the blindfold and said now. So when I'm answering these questions, when they turn around, when I'm answering these questions, they are just threatening me. So like when they're abusing me, they're saying they should feel good and say thank their president for doing that to me, like Sema Sande Sana, Sande Sana. So they told me we have recorded these videos so that if you go back to your country and you say what we did to you, we shall put them online and shame you, and your kids will see this, your family will see this, everyone will see this. So, while I was naked, they questioned me, asked me my email address, my passwords, everything. And because I was in so much pain and I was afraid they're going to hurt me some more, I gave them everything they wanted. Then they told me to dress up. And that's when they took over to go and torture Agatha. They put back the blindfold, told me to dress up. I dressed up, put back the blindfold, and then left me on the ground. So we spent the night on that floor. I could barely walk. I was bleeding. And then I could hear Agatha screaming. And one of the men was there saying, why don't you give me permission to rape her? Because this one is like bit good. She looks very nice. Let me just allow me to shusha mzigo. Like, let me rape her. So I don't know what happened to Agatha, but I could just hear her screaming. The following morning, on Tuesday morning, they came and they told us to remove our clothes and to go shower. So my feet were swollen. I could not walk. So I begged them to allow me to crawl like a dog so that I could go to the bathroom. I crawled like a dog to where the bathroom was. That's when they removed my handcuffs. So when I stripped naked, I still had the handcuffs. That's when they removed the handcuffs and told me to take a shower. I was still bleeding, my stool had blood. And there's a man with an AK-47 standing there, like wearing civilian clothes. After that, they they gave me fresh change of clothes. They were just insulting me, and took me to another Land White cruiser, another White Land Cruiser, still blindfolded, and they took me away. And that's the last time I saw Agatha until now, when she came to Kenya. So that was on Tuesday morning. And then we drove and we drove and we drove and we drove for hours and hours until it got dark. I told them I wanted to use the bathroom. They said you can't leave the car. So they gave me a bottle to pee. Well, I was still blindfolded and handcuffed. Then eventually at night, I don't know where we ended up to, they took me to a room where they left me there. They gave me like a sodden a loaf of bread. That was on Tuesday night. So I slept there. I could hear, it was like a coastal place because I could hear the call for prayers. And there was like a very, there was like a warmth and a lot of mosquitoes. Spend the night there. They just come, insult me or kick me and go. Come, insult me, kick me and go. And then on Wednesday morning, they gave me a cup of tea and an ndazi. Then that Wednesday during the afternoon, their tone changed. They said, now we're going to let you go, but we're going to let you go with a very on your kali, which means like a stern warning that if you leave this country, you should never come back or we'll kill you. If you go to your country and say what we did to you, we'll find you and we'll kill you. And should never come back. So they said, do you want food? I said, I don't want food. I didn't have an appetite. The other thing is that because every time I wanted to go to the bathroom, they'd actually go there and stand by me like they're inspecting my stool. So I could not, I didn't have any privacy. And the only time the handcuff came up is when I went to the bathroom. But the blindfold never came out. So that afternoon they gave me a painkiller. Then on Wednesday evening, they told me, now you have to learn how to walk, because I could barely walk. So they told me to remove, I was wearing open shoes, remove open shoes, took me outside. Four officers surrounded me, they're all in civilian clothes. They stood there, removed the blindfold, said, now you have to walk and make sure you try and step your feet on the ground. Step your feet. Said, we're going to let you go, but don't ever come back in this country. So they taught me how to try and walk. They made me walk for like half an hour, said, that's enough. And then the following morning, on Thursday morning, They woke me up so early, maybe around 4:35 a.m. They put my things in the car, put me in the car, and then drove for like an hour. Stopped briefly, and then when they stopped briefly, they spoke outside, then drove again, then stopped again. Then told me, you're going to drop whatever you're going to drop. You don't open your eyes, don't turn back, don't look at us until you leave. So they told me, Lala Chini, they kicked me out, slept there on the floor, on the side of the road. And then when I opened my eyes, there was a Boda Boda guy waiting for me. I think they'd already done a deal with the Boda Boda guy. That Boda Boda guy drove me to the border, which I learned was the Horohoro border, the Tanzania-Kenya border. When they released me, they gave me 20,000 Tanzanian shillings and 400 Kenya shillings. This is that's your transport. And so at the border, I got someone who helped me push my bag, and I gave them the money, the 20,000 Tanzanian shillings. And then he helped me cross over. Then I used the money to take a boda and call my wife. When we went to Tanzania, we went there as friends of Tundu Lissu and friends of Tanzanians. I'm an East African, I have an East African passport, and I'm allowed to travel freely within the region, because that's the deal we are. Like we're a regional bloc. I did not go to that country legally, and I did not commit a crime. And that's why they did not take me to any court. So I was able to come back to this country. But when I came back, and when I go to the airport here in Nairobi, I asked the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and which is the same thing that I'm asking today. I said I was going to the hospital, and I wanted my medical report to be public of what they did to us. And I'm going to share the medical report today, and it's going to be circulated. Because I'd like the world to know of the very heinous things they did to us, to break us. And they did that to silence us and put fear on us. And it's something that we learned, that most Tanzanian activists go through similar things. they arrest you and they take you through sexual torture and tell you if you speak, you're going to humiliate you to your family and all that. And it's what they did to us is it breaks me. I'm not the same, but I know I'm going to heal. And I wanted to share this because we have decided we should not be silenced. And we should let the world know what happened to us. Yeah, so my government let me down. My government sided with Suluhu's government and said we're interfering with Tanzanian politics. We were not interfering in Tanzanian politics. We went there as visitors. And we did not hide the reasons for our visit. I have been to Tanzania before to visit another political prisoner, Freeman Mbowe, who was Chadema's leader before Tundu Lissu. I was in Uganda when Bobi Wine was under house arrest. I went to Uganda when Stella Nyanzi was in jail, visited her in jail. I've done that in many other African countries because I'm an African. And I belong to this continent, and Africa is home. So that's why we're here. So we're here to share our story and to say that our bodies might be broken, but our spirits are strong. Forgive my tears. It's just that, man, my heart is not good, man.
So, hi, everyone. I think everything Boniface has said is what I went through. Of course, everyone experiences what happens to us differently. So I will just focus on a few things that I thought about during that time. So the first time they put us in that car, the car is very dark, but they thought it important to add a blindfold. It's very tinted, very dark. Where they were putting me to sit, that's in the middle chair, there were guns. They had to first remove them so that I sit. So I am seated in the middle of two people, the one woman on that squad and another man. Boniface is behind, also in the middle of two people, and there's another two people in front, so six people. So they blindfolded me, and I felt like I was suffocating. It was as if they have covered my nose, my mouth, and I couldn't breathe. I'd never been blindfolded my whole life. What's funny is that I thought that they would come. I knew that they would come. I just didn't know it would come in Tanzania. I have lived looking over my shoulders in Uganda, where I have made so many powerful enemies because of my work. So it was strange that the day I had dreaded that I had known would come someday was coming in Tanzania, where I hadn't done absolutely anything, not even go on the street to protest, which is also right, but at least they could have that excuse. They picked me from a hotel I was in. The hotel, which was shocking, was very happy to give them everything, access to our rooms. You know, like, it looked normal to them. The lawyers we went with, and it was good that we knew what was happening in Tanzania. It was good to appreciate, because I have never seen where lawyers cannot say anything. We left that police station. So we'd been detained at immigration office for about 4 hours. We were at a police station for another 1 hour. They dismissed the lawyers, and the lawyers came to tell me, they have told us, you are being detained overnight. We will find you here in the morning. And I'm asking them a question, on what charge? Because after 5 hours, we don't know what charge. When I was being questioned, questions moved from Bonnie's gadgets, and I said, I don't have them. You came to my room, the only property of Bonnie's. You saw it. You checked it. from Bonnie's Gadgets to what are you doing in Tanzania? Okay, when did it become a crime to go to Tanzania? But I came here legally. My passport was stamped. There's no notice anywhere that has said Tanzania is not allowing nationals into its country. Why were you at Tundu Lissu's trial? One, I know Tundu Lissu. Two, I am a journalist. Part of your job is to be at a trial. Three, it was a public trial. I wasn't the only one there. It was a full court. How is it possible that I'm the only one here being questioned about that? Why didn't you bring everyone who was there? And many were evidently not Tanzanians. They were whites. Tundu Lissu's legal team introduced diplomats that were there and us that had come from East Africa to observe the trial. Then it became, so they are going through my passport. They had taken it from me and they are being angered by my passport having so many visas. So that's where this whole narrative of whites have sent you to disorganize us came from. Why do you have so many visas? How do you travel to all these countries? Where do you guys make your money? I should be an activist too if it makes you guys live such a life. And so at some point I asked them, may I be told what question, what issue you have brought me here to address? Because it was moving from all over the place and I think what Boniface didn't tell is that because they are used to not being challenged, questioned, or even answered, so they phoned two people and they called us arrogant. But it was confidence of, I haven't committed any crime. I know my rights. I haven't broken any law. So every time you're asking me a question, I am going to answer. And there are questions they would ask, and I would say, but how is this question related to why I'm here? Do you have children? I said, what have my children got to do with this? And like Bonnie said, so we are being questioned by so many people. That room had, I think the room at the immigration office had around 7 people. All of them, every time I say something, they jeer with so much anger. It was as if we had done something very personal to them. So up to the point where we go to the police station. And this is something I've wanted to emphasize. I come from a country that is also very dictatorial, full of impunity, but I never thought that one day I've found a country that is worse, a government that is worse. So my shock was that we are in the hands of public officials. They picked us from the hotel. They told our colleagues, because the elder General Ulimwengu asked the guy, I remember the first name being George, what's the issue? Why are you taking them? And they said, you know, just for them to help us with some investigations, answer some questions. So the feeling was that let's not be accused of blocking any form of investigations. We have gone to answer the questions they have, however ridiculous, however disagreeable they are. But so these people know that the world, many people already know we are in their hands. We are taken to a police station. We're in the hands of a police officer. I am sure like in any other East African country, even in Tanzania, the mandate of police officers, the core one is to protect citizens and their property. So we are in the hands of people that are supposed to protect citizens. But this person, that guy that was, we later to learned to, his name to be Faustin Mafere, called thugs to pick us from a police station, from his custody, without a care of, you know, I am untouchable, not just here in Tanzania, but everywhere. So in Uganda, they kidnap people. They torture people also. It's not a secret. But at least they kidnap you from a street so that no one knows who exactly is responsible for this. And many times they would deny, no, we don't know where he is or where she is. Here, the public officials were not afraid at all of being the ones to call thugs, to send us to thugs to do what they did to us. And for me, that's a level of impunity that I cannot fathom, that we are at that stage where people, of course, when I was still shocked, I saw members of parliament also saying Martha Karua should have been raped or sent back home on oxygen, and they were openly in parliament. If that doesn't scare East Africans, that we are at that barbaric level, and for them, sexual violence is a go-to thing, like it's the first thing they think of. So anyway, so when we're checking what they did to Boniface is exactly what they did to me. They get me out of the car. After they took Boniface, they had increased the volume of the gospel music they were playing. At first, I didn't know why, but I had Boniface screaming, and I knew they were trying to block that, me from hearing that. So they violently pick me out of that vehicle, and they also order me to strip naked. Now, I was afraid. You know, many people think I don't get afraid. I mean, I know people who say it seems fear is not in Agatha's DNA, but I was afraid. You know, I first got afraid when they blindfolded us. I think I had a moment of like almost a panic attack, because my fear was being tortured. I always thought, I wish the day they get me, I have like poison and I swallow it so that I don't go through so much pain, so much humiliation. So I was afraid when they picked us up, and then I told myself, there's nothing you can do. There's no way out. There's no one saving you. You are blindfolded. You are like that sort of suffocation where there's no way out. So I found myself having this calm of accepting, you know, whatever happens will happen. You have to be, to prepare yourself for it. Now, when they say take off your clothes, I realized that I hadn't prepared myself for that. So, of course, I hesitated. I'm so afraid. It had already been clear these are not people who have come to talk to you for a conversation where you can even beg or whatever. No, they had come with one instruction: inflict as much pain as you can. So before I say anything, there's one. I remember the first blow was on my back because I didn't undress immediately. And after that blow, they started taking off the clothes themselves, as forcefully, as violently as you imagine, because they're taking off and you're even about to fall down, because I had a jumper that is very tight in the neck, so by the time they get it out and everything, they take everything off. So there are layers of vulnerability. That is like the topmost. You're already in the hands of criminals, clearly. You're already blindfolded. Now you've been stripped naked. You don't know what's happening. You don't know what's in front of you in your, you know, complete nakedness and all. So yeah, they tie me up. They first handcuff me. But before handcuffing me, they put my jumper that I was wearing to put the handcuffs on top. But still, it still left marks anyway. Yeah, so they tie my legs, my arms to my legs, and they also, you know, put like something wood, like a stick in between, and then they carry me upside down like that. And the rest is everything they did to Boniface. They are inserting something in your anus so bad, like so deep, you want to beg them to actually rip you in the right place, because you are thinking it can't be as painful as this. Of course, that's in the moment of that pain. But after that, you thank God that now you're not dealing with HIV, other diseases being, you know. So they didn't use their sexual organs. That was, and I hate to say, a relief with all that happened, but it could have been worse. I didn't see a way out of that. I didn't think we'd get out of that alive. It brings me to what I have, you know, wanted to tell. the citizens of East Africa. We are alive because of you. And it's important that we've now understood that as East African citizens, we are on our own. We are on our own, and we were saved by you, ordinary people. No guns, no office, no money, no nothing. The noise everyone made. They had thought it would be like those Tanzanians that they kidnap and torture and kill. And it goes quietly. No one knows them. So I think when he's talking about his government letting him down, at least they pretended and put out a statement. Mine didn't. Because for our governments, it was good riddance. Someone else is getting rid of our headaches. Why would they care about that? But the people of East Africa who have now understood that we only have each other, we have no governments, we have no police that as constitutionally mandated that protects their citizens. And you guys showed up so big that that our tormentors, you know, when they took me from Dar to another place, if you check the distance from Dar Salaam to Mutukula, the border with Uganda, is about 1,480 kilometers. So I was driven that distance. This is someone who had flown into Dar with my own ticket. No one, I had a return ticket. I showed it to them. So I think the distance being long and whatever, there's one of the tormentors who became friendly. And the day, I think this was Wednesday morning, after I'd spent half the night in a different detention center, which looked exactly like where they tortured us from. When you saw the facilities, like the toilet where they would take off the blindfold, the toilet was the same, the bucket that is in there, so it was also another government detention center. And I started refusing to eat. By this time, they were giving us painkillers to heal our injuries. Like Bonnie said, we couldn't walk. For 3 days, I couldn't step down. The feet were so swollen. Has your skin ever become so tight that you think if you stepped on something, it would prick it or it would burst? That's how under my feet were, and we couldn't walk. So they kept giving me painkillers. They almost overdosed me on them because I later saw the paper that had the painkillers. It was saying 1 times 2, but I think they gave it to me. There's a time they gave it to me 4 times a day. So now I realize they are interested in us going out in a better shape. So I refused to eat so that now it's urgent for them to let me go. So this guy comes to plead with me to eat and says, you know, these people didn't know they had arrested you're very popular. Everyone is looking for you, and shows me some of the protests that were happening. I think he opened either Facebook and I saw Hussein and Hanifa at the Tanzanian embassy with our photos and placards. And that's what overwhelmed them. I think, you know, because when we're going through, and the things are so many to tell you, there's just no time. So when we are being driven from that detention center in Dar, so at first I think they're taking us back to the police station because that's what they had told our lawyers. Then the drive becomes so long. Then I think maybe they're taking us to the airport. Then it still becomes so long. People who were picked at around 9 a.m., nightfall came and were still driving. And the car is being driven so fast. I cannot describe to you the psychological torture. You're blindfolded. You're still with these killers. So I think the psychological torture of those days of driving for me was worse than the physical torture I endured earlier. Because I kept thinking they are going to throw us in the park to be eaten by animals. Or sometimes I would hear as if the ocean is roaring near us and I would think they would throw me in the ocean. And you are thinking that, yeah, you would be one of those people whose families never know whether you are dead or alive, whether you would return or not. And I went through that for the whole day and night. And yeah, so we're saved by ordinary people. And it's from ordinary us East Africans that justice will come. I think when everyone would ask, can we help you with something, do you need something, especially those that are powerful, the diplomatic community, I found so many messages on my phone from some of them in Uganda, and I would say, the only thing I want is justice. It's what kept me going in that situation. I was feeling so much pain, and that whole night I asked, but what did we do to deserve this? What's the point to this pain? And I came to a consolation that maybe the point to this pain is that other Tanzanians, the Tanzanians have told you that are picked up and tortured and killed and no one knows them, is that they get justice. Is that no one else, not a Tanzanian, not an East African, has to go through that. Is that impunity is somehow checked, somehow. And I thought, you know, Boniface and I both have a name and a profile and platforms that, how many people can call Janice and you fill up a room like this? How many ordinary Tanzanians can do that? So in that moment, I thought that maybe it had to take our pain for the world to know what an ordinary Tanzanian is going through. And for me, that gave me some hope in that moment. That even if I died, it would probably not be in vain, because the facade of Tanzania is peaceful. Of it has a female president who is phenomenal. Finally goes off. And so if it goes off, but people that have the power to hold this accountable do not, like, we know they won't, because for our governments, it is a collaboration in that dictatorship, in that tyranny. It has been for a while. It has been. We have known that for a while. When Ugandans are kidnapped from Kenya, when a Tanzanian is almost kidnapped from Kenya. So it becomes that we are the ones that will do that. And, of course, Kenyans were already doing a good job by publishing all those people's names, phones, pictures. So we have to use the little power we have to make sure that guy Mafere, who thought he does not only own Tanzania but the whole world, because I'm later told of how the Tanganyika Law Society president calls him asking about us, and he says, we will do whatever we want with them and there's nothing you or anyone else can do. He told that to the Tanzanian Tanganyika Law Society president. So we need to find a way of getting justice in one way or the other. And so I think mainly that for me, I am grateful. I look at the silver lining in every dark place, and there was that. There was that we are all now tormenting them. When I became a journalist, my first editor told me that the role of a journalist is to afflict the comfortable. So they've been comfortable in their impunity, and we'll have to find ways of afflicting them. We won't find justice in Tanzania, because this was a state doing that, and it's the state that is supposed to get us that justice. But we'll have to find justice somehow. I will end by saying that I don't even care about the people that inflicted pain on us. I'm not angry with them. I am so angry with the people that made that order. Even if we never identify those that actually inflicted pain, but we get the ones that had the responsibility. If I have committed a crime, charge me for it. In that moment, I thought we were dealing with probably overzealous officers and the president didn't know what had happened. But I come out and I'm told about a statement she gave. So you are condoning torture. You are a president. So you're sort of saying, oh, they came to destabilize us. They came to cause chaos. So, okay, if you think that's a crime, take me to court. Let me be charged. Let me be in prison. But you can't be a whole head of state, a whole president, and you're going to very shamelessly, publicly condone torture, sexual violence. I'm going to stop there. And I thank you very much again. I hope all the citizens from Kenya are watching, all the citizens from Uganda and Tanzania. Tanzania also, a few people beat the fear and spoke about our disappearance and our ordeal. So I thank you all, and yes, thank you for your time.
And I think the other thing, the backlash from our race, some people had to flee the country. So we have some people who are Tanzanians and were like our hosts in the country. They've been forced to flee the country because they've been looked for. And our heart goes to them. I think there's a statement that's supposed to be read, and then we can do a Q&A once the statement is read. So we do the Q&A. So we can do the Q&A, and then the medical. Do you want to answer that? You had a question about, was it worth it?
Yeah, let me answer that. So, I was telling Bonnie, and maybe this is a question we need to speak about here. Every journalist or activist has that worry of security for our devices. And so in that moment when we thought we are going to be killed, I'm asking myself, but at what point do you put your life over the gadgets? As journalists, we are told that there's no story worth your life. So I am thinking there's no gadget worth your life. So as a journalist, I always think that I will not give my gadget willingly if it compromises the security of sources. Because in those governments, in these security, whatever, you have some people that give you information, and those ones you want to protect with your life. Now, for Bonnie's phones, I don't know what was on it. And I was asking, did he think through and assess whether this is worth it? And we had this conversation for the first time because I didn't see him until Saturday when I came to Nairobi. And he was giving me this explanation of, but we have people we are working with. We have friends in Tanzania. But I'm still saying, I would only, and that's me. I think that's a moment where everyone has to rationalize and think about what's the best. I'm still thinking people we're working with were not working on anything, any crime, any secret. If we're a rebel group that is trying to overthrow these people that should be overthrown, by the way, I would say that I don't want them to find that I was working with Manasseh or with, you know. But there was no crime. Even if they had found that I am in Tanzania with Generali Ulimwengu, they wouldn't find me saying, let's keep the guns here. There's no conversation that is criminal there. Yes, because we are dealing with rogue people, it might endanger them. But I just like to stand in truth. I had been very transparent from the time they asked me that this is what I'm here for. These are people who are colleagues. When they're in trouble, we show up to show solidarity. So if it was in my case, I would have said, okay, you can have them. Look at what I was doing. Look at what we agreed that let's be here for Tundu Lissu's case. But all through that, I thought that was Bonnie's decision to make, not mine. I think everyone here, even you guys, if you are in that sort of situation, it's you to think through it and assess, do maybe a cost-benefit analysis or risk analysis. if it were in my case, and I know you will never find me engaged in crime. So if my phone means saving my life, I'll give it to you. You're not going to find anything that is, yeah. So Bonnie can say...
I did not think you were going to be tortured because of the phone. So I thought I'd given Agatha some of my gadgets and she passed the gadget to someone else. And my problem was if they Agatha says who she gave them to, then they pick that other person, then they pick another person, and then we'd be all arrested in the same hotel because all of us in the same hotel. So I thought it was a risk worth taking, but I never thought they were going to torture me because my arrest was very public. So the gadgets were never found, and some brave Kenyans were able to smuggle them back to the country. Yes.
But there was never any
criminal
search warrant also for our... Nothing. So it was all illegal from the start. It was an illegal process.
Yes.
Hi. I'm sorry for what you two went through. You're talking about seeking for justice. And I'm wondering, have you filed any form of complaint against Tanzanian authorities, or are there plans to pursue any legal action?
So we're filing a case in Tanzanian court. We're going to sue the Tanzanian state in Tanzania.
And we are going to sue them in every other avenue. Where we will find justice is where, because the international justice process requires that you first exhaust local avenues, and we have to do that. But like I said, we cannot expect justice from Tanzania, but we want to exhaust all other avenues, regional, the EACJ, which unfortunately also sits in Tanzania. And that also makes you wonder if we'll get justice from that, the African court, and political avenues, if there are sanctions for... Because for me, I have been saying, let's identify these people and put them out there. If we can get sanctions for them, so we are really trying to say, let's exhaust all avenues and we see where we'll get some sort of remedy. And the lawyers have been working on that. Yeah, so we are going to go everywhere until we find where we can find justice. Yes.
Steve. Can we get someone else and then? Yes, yes.
Hi, I'm Ben Tarrell from Radio France. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. Thank you. It's really sorry. You mentioned the lack of or delayed response from your respective governments. Do you suspect that they could have known more than what they said?
Well, I was being, when Mafuele began beating me at the police station with the other officers, Mafuele said that he knows about me, that I was involved in the Kenyan protest, and I burnt Kenya's parliament down, and I was a troublemaker. So there was a bit of information from the torturers that could only come from Kenyan authorities. And I think for them to escalate from an arrest to torture, they had to think that my government doesn't care about us. And that's why Agatha was saying that if it wasn't for Kenyans and Tanzanians and Ugandans who spoke about our plight and our arrest, would have disappeared forever. Our government was complicit in that torture. And if you look at our Foreign Affairs Minister, Mudavadi, when he spoke, he did not apologize to me. He apologized to Tanzanians that he took our bad manners to Tanzania. So it's very clear that our government had a role to play in our torture.
So it's maybe anecdotal. We don't have any proof that they were involved. But there's corroborative evidence or circumstantial. When the president of Tanzania puts out a statement about how we were there to disorganize, destabilize or something like that, I didn't read it, but... The CDF in Uganda, who is also the president's son, Muhoozi Kainerugaba, sort of retweets, quotes the tweet and says, that's why she's my favorite. Deal with them or something like that, you know? So while you cannot say he speaks for government, he's part of government, and he said that. But also the fact that they didn't raise a finger, apart from the ambassador of Uganda to Tanzania, who also wasn't acting on behalf of government, but was acting because I have an uncle who was his comrade in the Bush War, because this is also part of the Museveni Bush War. So there are historicals, and he was a former Secretary General for the East African Community and had called him and said, find my niece and all that. I don't think he did a lot. He corresponded with my family a lot about me, but I don't think it was as government of Uganda. It was an individual who has been asked for a favor by a former comrade. So the government itself does know where is our citizen, what crime have they committed, nothing like that. So that should be enough for someone to think there are accomplices by action or inaction. That's what I would say. Yeah.
Eva from German Press Agency, DPA, thanks very much for sharing Mustafa Kemal. But do you think that what happened to you, and given the human rights situation in East Africa in general, that it was also as like a warning shot to any human rights activists, not only active in Tanzania, but in other countries of the region, see what can happen to you, you're not safe?
Yeah, that was the purpose of that violence. To warn us, to scare us, to intimidate us, but also to send a message to whoever would like to stand up for their rights or the rights of other East Africans. And I think that's why we are here, to say that we cannot afford to be cowed, to be threatened, to be intimidated. So when they are using sexual violence, sexual rape is associated with shame and stigma. They use that, so they know that it will inflict maximum pain, but also dehumanize and shame you. And it has worked in Tanzania because people come out and they say, I don't want to be looked at as a rape victim. And I think this time they got wrong people, because I understand enough to know that I am not the one who should be ashamed because of your heinous acts, shameful. You should be ashamed. And I dare them. I dare them to publish those videos, because for me, we need them. There will be proof of their criminality. Now, for you to think that you publishing a video where you're doing something as barbaric, as primitive, I am the one who should worry about it. You must be just a sick person or deranged somehow. So that's why we are here, that was done to us, to make sure they instill fear, they intimidate us from doing what we think is the right thing to do. It's not just right, it's necessary. We have to stand up for all of us. Yeah, so that I tell whoever that might have intimidated and slowed down that, you know, there was going to be a cost to this, for this struggle. There was going to be a price we'll have to pay. So it is either you pay that price or we live in this captivity forever. Yeah.
Yes.
There's this flower organization we have. It's called East African Community, where this should never have happened because you have passports. What do you think this event speaks to the integration of the region? And do you think you'll be unbound because you went there for King Lissu, whose case again is continuing? Maybe a comment
today,
on that
actually.
Also. Mm. And what do you think of EAC, the bloc?
So I think there's integration in atrocities and torture. So Museveni, Ruto, and Suluhu share a playbook on arresting dissenters and activists. So on that level of cooperation, they cooperate, because if you look at the chair of East African Community is Salva Kiir of South Sudan, and South Sudan is a country in strife. There's civil war, and there's no human rights. There are no human rights in South Sudan. So the integration is actually is a mirage. But when it comes to torture and abuse of power, they share tactics. But when it comes to economic integration, there's none.
So the case of Tundu Lissu, I think it's today. It's happening ongoing. Today. Yeah. And I had a conversation with comrades about it yesterday, and I said, if no one goes there, they have achieved exactly what they wanted. But I also understand the need to re-strategize and find a safe way of still doing that. I hope, even from afar, some of the comrades are following it up to talk about it, to give it the attention it deserves. But I can assure you that, as me, Agatha, I wouldn't stop because of that. I think we will need to have this conversation and say, how do we do it without endangering ourselves, or what happening again? How do we push back? We really have to push back against that. I wasn't in position to follow it up today. Even when you're brave and in what way you need time to heal, we are still recovering from what happened. But I hope that the others are doing something about it. Yeah.
Well, lastly, Paul, do you feel safe as a human rights activist in East Africa?
No, I don't feel safe. I've been abducted in this country. I've been shot before in this country. My house has been bombed in this country. So I've gone through all manner of hell, but I've never gone through the kind of physical torture that I went through in Tanzania. Do I feel safe? No. Will I stop? I'll never stop. I think I'll stop when I die. When I was being tortured, and I thought it's going to be a waste of life to die in Tanzania, I wish I was thinking about dying in my own country. You know, I spent three nights, 3 days, handcuffed, blindfolded, so there was no stimuli in my mind. So the only thing I had to do, just meditate and think about my life. And I buried myself. I went to my funeral. I had nightmares. But when they let me go, I realized my spirit was not broken. I was afraid that they might kill me. When they were driving that very long distance, I thought I was going to get dumped in the Serengeti to be treated by wild animals. But that did not happen. And so I have a second chance in life. We both do have a second chance in life. And I think it will be allowing them to win if I stop doing the work that you've been doing. So we'll continue the work we're doing. I think the pain that I have is that my mind hurts. Like, there's a lot of stress that I have that was not there before, because we were violated, you know, that should never be violated. They did things to us that should never have done to us. And that breaks me, but does not break my spirit. So I might look weak because my body is also weak. I have multiple fractures. I have broken toes on both my left and right foot. I have wounds in my private places, like I have wounds all over my body. And they're healing. And I'll be back in the streets. I think the only thing that can stop me from doing this work is death. So as long as I'm alive, I'll continue. Even when I'm scared, I'll still do it. Yeah. And also think about the trauma that my kids are going through, because to explain that I was sexually violated for going to attend a court case doesn't make sense for anyone, you know. There's nothing that makes sense about what happened to us. And there's nothing that makes sense that as a citizen of this country, my government is silent about it. There's nothing normal about that. I was violated by another state. And instead of getting an apology from the government, it's our government apologizing to my torturers. That pains me. And I think that's the reason why I must organize to remove this government from power, because it has to go.
Yes.
So as long as I'm alive, we will work towards removing this government, as long as I can breathe. That's what you say. That's where you need to go. Are there any other questions? There's a statement by comrades about the state of human rights in East Africa that needs to be shared. And then there are two people, Hussein Halid and Willy Mutunga, former Chief Justice, who were deported from Tanzania, and they can share their part. And then I will share some documents with you guys.